Hi, I'm Mike Holland. I'm the Assistant Managing Editor of Pharmaceutical Executive. Welcome to the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast. I'd like to introduce our guest today.
Hi, I'm Catherine Owen Adams, and it's a pleasure to be here with you today.
And before we get started, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am the CEO of Acadia Pharmaceuticals. I have been in the role for about a year, and I come with a background of about 30 years plus now, unfortunately, in the pharmaceutical industry. Most of that time has been in the US, which belies my accent, which is obviously British. I started life there. I moved here about 22 years ago and have been here ever since. So, yes, I'm excited to be chatting to you today.
And that brings me to my first question for you. Where do you see neuroscience and rare disease innovation heading?
So, I think the last few years have been really interesting for neuroscience and rare disease. Let me sort of take you a little bit back in my personal history. Around 5, 6 years ago now, I moved to Bristol Myers Squibb from 25 years at Johnson and Johnson. And when I moved to Bristol, they just merged with Celgene, and we had an awful lot of launches ahead of us, and it included some opportunities to launch into rare disease spaces, which I hadn't really experienced before at J&J. And so for me, it was the first time I'd really understood the opportunity and the differences in terms of rare disease. And I really, really enjoyed it. Prior to that at J&J, I'd had a lot of history in neuroscience. A lot of J&J's history is in that space. And so when I came to Acadia, combining the neuroscience and rare disease, it was a perfect kind of opportunity for me because, to your question, there really has been an acceleration of innovation. I think the neuro disease space particularly had quite a lot of innovation when I first started in the industry in sort of the mid-90s. We had new schizophrenia MOAs, we had new depression MOAs, and then there was a bit of a lull, and it became sort of a bit of a backwater in terms of innovation and new mechanisms of action. And I think we've seen in the last sort of 3 to 4 years a real advancement in those spaces. And as an example, with the launch of J&J Spravato and Bristol Myers Cobenfy, new MOAs, and many others. And so you've seen sort of a lot more deal action, a lot more M&A, et cetera, in the neuro space, and a lot more hope. And at Acadia, we've got quite a lot of programs now in phase two and phase three in Alzheimer's disease psychosis and Lewy body dementia psychosis, in major depressive disorder. And so we're really anticipating that innovation will continue to sort of snowball. And in rare disease, I think the focus has been on ensuring that rare disease was supported in the US with the introduction of the PRV, or the Priority Review Voucher, where the FDA kind of encourages innovation in the space by giving you a PRV if you get an orphan drug or a rare disease drug approved. We've seen a lot of increase in rare disease innovation, and that is continuing. And so bringing those two together in Acadia has been really exciting for me, and I'm looking forward to the next few years to see some of that fruit come to fruition, as it were, from our pipeline.
And I was wondering if you could talk about the impact of adding biomarkers to phase two and three trials.
Yeah, I think let's talk about the neuro space. There's been a lot of learning in the space around the heterogeneity of symptoms. And how, let's just take dementia, the psychosis of dementia can be associated with Alzheimer's disease, frontal lobe dementia, Lewy body dementia, all types of different subtypes. And because of that, it has been important, I think, to ensure that when you're getting a drug approved, the patients you're treating are better understood. So somebody with a psychosis could have any one of those diseases I've just mentioned as the underlying cause, Parkinson's disease as well, with our Nuplazid drug. So the importance of biomarkers in really understanding what the patient is suffering from is crucial. And so we're introducing biomarkers in our studies, other people are too. And I think it goes along with the overall trend in healthcare that healthcare systems need to be better supported to have products that are specific to subpopulations, and that we can't expect a continued sort of blanket use of products across sort of heterogeneous groups of patients if there is a biomarker available to make that specificity a little bit more certain. And so I think it helps payer systems in terms of having subpopulations where we know this drug will work better. It helps patients because they're not going to be put onto drugs that probably won't work. And so as the advances and the science has increased, the excitement, I think, is there to really have more and more drugs now that are used with biomarkers. And I think that is only good for patients and healthcare systems.
And I gotta imagine working in with breakthrough therapies at this moment with the regulatory landscape must be interesting. So from your experience, do you have any advice for people how they can navigate the current regulatory and market landscape?
Yeah, I mean, to say the landscape is evolving is probably the understatement of the year, right? But for me and for us at Acadia, I think it's been a lesson in two things. Maybe I'll focus on the first is just to heads down, carry on in terms of the process, the clinical trials, the submission, because all we can do is work within the current situation, and so we're continuing to follow the timelines, the guidelines, the submissions, et cetera. And for us, we haven't actually seen a huge impact yet on any of the changes that have been made sort of at a more macro level. I mean, I think the other thing is it's important as the CEO of any pharmaceutical company to have a voice and have a voice in making sure that people who are making policy understand the impact and sometimes the unintended consequences of the impact of those policies. And I've made it a focus of my CEO sort of first year to be active. I'm active as part of Bio on their executive board. And I've been on the Hill talking to senators to help them understand the impact of some of these policy changes. I've also been to Europe and talked to the British government about their policy changes and how they're impacting rare disease, because it's not just US, it's global. And so I think, as a CEO, part of your responsibility is to be out there ensuring that people who make policy understand what they're doing. And it's a maybe a slower impact than we would like, but I think it's important to continue voicing and continuing being part of something that positively has the patients at the center and ensuring that patients' voices are heard.
It does sound, from what I'm hearing from most people, that despite the, we'll call it an uncertain landscape with some decisions being made, to really just focus on getting the treatments and the science together, and then the business can kind of figure the rest out. Would you agree with that?
I would. I mean, I think it's probably the only way right now, because there's so much uncertainty from day to day. And so yes, I would concur with that. And add my point is just not to sit on the sidelines, because otherwise, these things can take a turn for the worse. It's to actively become engaged in, state level politics, and federal politics to ensure that those concerns are voiced.
And you touched briefly on this before, but from a leadership perspective, how important would you say it is to be an inclusive leader?
I think growing up in the sort of 90s, 2000s as a leader, in big blue chip pharma companies, I was fortunate to be exposed to a lot of different leaders, leadership training, et cetera, as well as be on my own leadership journey. And one of the most important things I've learned is that people rarely respond well and bring their best selves to work unless they can be their whole self at work, unless they know that their ideas are heard, that they're listened to, and that they're embraced, and that they have the opportunity to really sort of go over and above for leaders who want to listen and who want to understand that they might not always have the right answer. And so, I've seen it evolve, and I passionately believe that you can't get the best out of a company or a culture without ensuring that everybody feels like they belong. We talk about diversity, but diversity is nothing without inclusion. And so feeling included is one of the most important things I think you have as a leadership role. That doesn't mean that everybody always has the opportunity to have their voice sort of make a decision, because that's not always the case. But it's the voice is heard and understood and listened to, and then is calculated in the decision-making process. And that's, I think, the difference.
Awesome. Well, that covers all the questions I had. Was there anything you'd like to add?
No, just like to say that I enjoyed the conversation and enjoying my role as the CEO of Acadia. And we are excited to share our mission, which is to turn scientific promise into meaningful innovation that makes a difference for underserved neurological disorders and rare disease communities around the world. And I'm excited to continue that mission.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. And for everyone listening, thank you for checking us out, the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.